In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And thanks for joining us today on the iSpy Radio Show. It's good to be back. It's good to be here. As every week, we help you get a little more intelligence on big government. Fighting back against the liberal agenda, which I guess is pretty much the same thing, those big government liberals. You know, we took a week off last week to deal with some health issues for my father-in-law. Some of you in our audience know what's going on and what we've been dealing with, not only with Dad's health, but we've had to fight the healthcare system, which has really let him down, especially what Oregon has done to our healthcare system. It has been shocking to see and to deal with firsthand. I think we will be doing a major set of shows about what you out there may also soon be facing. Dad is currently in hospice right now, and we appreciate your good thoughts and prayers for him and for me and my family as we continue to hope for the best for him. And that's why we do what we do here at iSpy, fighting the liberals, exposing what they do to government and by extension to all of us. All too often it seems there is nothing, no part of society that the liberal agenda cannot or will not screw up, all under the guise of helping. The environment. They claim they want to save the earth, but that means doing away with people. Healthcare. They want healthcare for all, but that doesn't mean good healthcare, and certainly not if you're old. It's like saying they want everyone to be rich, but what they really mean is less for everyone. They want diversity, but that often means punishing the majority, including being perfectly okay with violence against whites. Even worse, Planned Parenthood's goal of exterminating black minorities. Everything the left touches becomes tainted, like some sort of Midas touch in horrible, horrible reverse. It's not a golden touch, it's the touch of destruction. When it gets right down to it, the left is full of hatred. Hate for society, hate for America, hate for the individual, hate for the unborn, hate for Christianity, hate for our American heritage, our traditions, our holidays, and on and on and on. On today's show, we'll welcome back football star Burgess Owen, who is coming to Oregon, by the way, to discuss the liberal agenda destroying the once proud National Football League and other sports, as well as the devastation they've caused to the black community. But we're going to start with Dr. Tim Ball to talk about the left's weapon to push so much of their agenda, global warming. As so many of us on the right side of the aisle have been saying, there is no global warming. And those who preach global warming have been lying about the numbers. A whistleblower has come forward to say, yes, NOAA, that's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, an official government agency, manipulated data to hide the fact that there has been no global warming pause, all so that they could push the political agenda of global warming. Why? It's not to save the planet. It's to keep the money flowing to their political allies and organizations to push their political agenda. Think about that. An official government agency, paid for by taxpayers, lied to the American public to push their political agenda. They lied not just to us, but to the entire world, because these temperature readings are the backbone to UN treaties and other countries' own environmental policies. Policies based on lies. And the most expensive lies in the history of mankind. If the left had gone through with it and had gone away with it, these lies would have cost tens of trillions of dollars. Trillions of dollars that could have been spent on roads or bridges or healthcare, or even better, just letting people keep their own money rather than giving it to a lying big government. To talk about the NOAA whistleblower and the effects it could have on the liberal agenda, I'd like to welcome Dr. Tim Ball back to the show. Dr. Tim is a retired professor, a historical climatologist, and an avid opponent to the so-called scientific consensus in the global warming controversy. Dr. Tim, it's good to talk to you again.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
You know, several years ago, there was what became known as Climategate, when some emails were leaked from the University of East Anglia over there in the UK, and how these global warming scientists were basically fudging the numbers and hiding the decline in global warming because it just wasn't happening. And so now we have Climategate 2 with this whistleblower from NOAA. Would you say that these two events are pretty much on par?
Yes, they're very much on par, and of course, they're as with so many leagues these days, they're deliberate and done with deliberate timing. And the ClimateGate one, for example, the original one in November of 2009, I think it was somebody on the inside, because whoever did it knew which out of a quarter of a million emails, they picked 1,000 that exposed the malfeasance that was going on. But it occurred in November of 2009, because in December of 2009, they were going to do the final approval of the Kyoto Protocol. And, of course, the Kyoto Protocol had to be approved by the Conference of the Parties, which is the political agency that advises the UN, and they can only act upon the science that they're given by the IPCC. The emails that were leaked showed that the science was corrupted. And, of course, it completely put a spanner in the works of the political agenda. So whoever did it knew what they were doing, and the timing was very important. And, of course, what's also interesting about it is that the emails were initially sent, 1,000 emails sent to a reporter at the BBC, who they thought, Richard Black, was starting to ask questions about it. Well, he sat on them. He didn't do anything. And then the person who leaked them got panicked. And then they were leaked through a Russian IP. Now, of course, we've seen that so much in the news today. The reason that Russian IPs are used is because they're not traceable. And that's why most everything that's leaked out comes out through Russian IPs. And so it was very political, very timely, very important. This latest one with the NOAA, is because of the Paris Climate Conference and what Trump is doing, where he's talking about getting rid of it. And the actual story of them cooking the books and what it was about, Mark, was that they, as you know, the temperature had leveled off starting in about 2000. And it went on, and they said, oh, if it doesn't last for 17 years, it's not meaningful. Well, then it went 17 years. And they called it the pause or the hiatus. And, of course, it became a problem because it completely contradicted what they were arguing. The temperature was leveling off, in fact, going down slightly, but the CO2 continued to rise. And so that would have been a real problem at the Paris Climate Conference, because people could get up and say, well, look, it's not doing what you said it was going to do. And so Tom Carl at NOAA and his sidekick Peterson created an adjusted temperature record to show that the pause didn't exist.
And how do they do that? Do they just go back and manually manipulate those numbers, or do they have to actually change some computer modeling, or what's the process there?
Well, the way that they actually did it, there's several different ways of doing it. And of course, one of the things people need to know is that there are 5 official global temperatures, average temperatures produced, and they all come up with different numbers, yet they're supposedly using the same data. It depends on which weather stations you use, how you adjust those individual weather stations to alter your final result. But in this particular case, it was a matter of which temperature record you were using. Now, there was what they needed was a record that showed that the past was warmer than it actually was, and they needed a record that showed that the present was cooler than it actually is. In other words, to shift the line from a slope upwards of warming and then a leveling off into essentially a flat line. And so what they did was they took a sea surface temperature record, which everybody knew, and it was put out there. Do not use this. This is not reliable data.
Wow.
And they used that. Yeah, so it's cherry picking.
Yeah, okay. Let me interrupt you there. We're up against a break here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more on this with Dr. Tim Ball. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking about ClimateGate 2. This is because of a whistleblower at NOAA has once again exposed some data manipulation that the political left has been using to prove global warming. We're talking with Dr. Tim Ball. He's a retired professor from the University of Winnipeg, and he is a Canadian geographer and historical climatologist. best known for his public opposition to the so-called scientific consensus in the global warming controversy. And, you know, we were talking about how they were manipulating these numbers. It's interesting that they are not only manipulating numbers, which is a huge violation of the scientific process, but they are also using bad data to begin with, that you said that everybody was told not to use those data sets.
Yeah, one of the big issues, and of course the ocean is 70% of the land surface, and it's a major, major factor in controlling the atmosphere and temperatures and everything else. Also, by the way, it's a major source and sink that is absorber of CO2. So what goes on in the oceans is extremely important. Actual measurements of ocean temperatures is still completely inadequate for any research, but they're using it anyway. But in the early days, they were using temperatures of the ocean taken by thermometers that were at the where the ship intakes water to cool its engines. And but before that, they were using a bucket. They would simply drop a bucket into the ocean and pull the water out and take the temperature of the water.
Now, that's high tech, man.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And what they discovered, by the way, was that there was a difference in the temperature if they used a wooden bucket or a metal bucket. And so those early attempts at getting some measure of ocean temperatures was really a disaster. And then even when they started taking the intakes by the ships, obviously that's a completely compromised position. And so people said, look, don't use those early ocean temperatures. They're not reliable. Yeah. Now they have some buoys floating in the ocean, and they've been giving quite completely different records. And then the other problem they had was when they put the satellites up, they started getting ocean temperatures. But the problem was that the satellite was only measuring literally the top millimeter of the ocean surface temperature. Wow. And that is completely unreliable because what's happening right at the surface is the molecular evaporation, and therefore there's dramatic cooling going on. And I remember when they came out with a story saying, oh, the oceans are 6 degrees Celsius warmer than they thought they were. Well, it turned out it was this problem with them actually measuring only 1 millimeter of the ocean surface. So the whole thing has been a farce from the beginning. And so when Tom Carl used that in order to create the graph that he wanted in order for Obama for the Paris Climate Conference, it was just really criminal.
Yeah, it's all about pushing that political agenda here. What's been the response of NOAA in the wake of this whistleblower? Did they come clean and admit they'd lied? Or are they trying to cover it up?
No, what happened was that the story came into the news recently because one of the scientists who was with NOAA, Dr. John Bates, and his job was to do a check on the methodology and use of data and so on. And when he looked at what Carl had done, he said, hey, no, this is not good enough. In other words, he was sort of the standards checker. And he went to the bosses at NOAA and told them. The story is that they told him to just shut up and go away. Hmm. And Bates basically did that. Now, the story was in the news at that time, not because Bates reported it, because we knew when the data came out that what they had done was wrong. And what happened was that at the time, and this was June 2015, Lamar Smith, the congressman, appeared at a climate conference that I was at in Washington and said, look, we've subpoenaed all of the records of what Dr. Carl did at NOAA by adjusting the data. And we've asked them for not only the records, but the emails and the what actually went on here. NOAA said, go away. We're not going to give them to you. Wow. They refused to turn down a subpoena from a congressman who was chair of the Science Committee in Congress.
Wow.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And yet there was no virtual reporting of that at all.
No.
And go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, what's been the response among the larger cult of global warming believers? Because, I mean, it really is a cult, I think, in many ways. Did this wake any of them up, or is their faith pretty much unshakable?
No, they're pretty much unshakable because, you know, they think that the skeptics are conspiracy theory and they see conspiracy theories everywhere. But as I said, Congressman Smith, and by the way, he's renewed his application to NOAA saying we want this information. And it's very similar, by the way, to Michael Mann refusing access to his information and how he achieved it, and yet the information is being used to drive public policy.
It's just, and
here you've got bureaucrats doing it. And, I mean, it's just truly frightening. Now, Bates, of course, waited till he retired. He didn't. He didn't come out at the time. What he should have done was, when his bosses said no, shut up and don't say anything about it. Don't do anything about it. He should have gone right away to the media and to Congress and said, "Hey, this is what's going on." He had to know that Lamar Smith was investigating this. Yet he did nothing. He waited till he retired, and that's the problem. So now you can't call him a whistleblower, because whistleblowers do it when they're on the job.
That's correct.
And that's a real challenge.
Well, it is. And I can certainly understand somebody in that position, and you're nearing retirement. And I mean, that's pretty frightening to suddenly come up against somebody like that, especially given what we saw under the Obama administration, where he used the government and the IRS and some of these other agencies to punish dissent. And so I can kind of understand and forgive him on that. Let's go ahead and take a break here, because I've got some bigger questions for you. Coming up, we're going to continue our thoughts here and discussion with Dr. Tim Ball about Climate Gate 2. Stay with us.
Think of it as actionable intelligence. The iSpy Radio Show.
And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show, talking about Climate Gate 2, the release of some information about how NOAA fudged the numbers in order to try to prove that there's been global warming going on. And we're talking with Dr. Tim Ball. He's a retired professor out of the University of Winnipeg and very well known for his opposition to the so-called scientific consensus that man is causing the Earth to heat up. You know, in looking at this, you know, he's not really a whistleblower, but in looking at this and how NOAA fudged the numbers, I mean, so much of society is based on trust. And you've got, like any government report, whether it's the unemployment numbers, which we know have been manipulated, the budgets and spending and so forth, you need to trust government workers to measure and report things accurately. But because this report has been doctored, it really undermines trust in so many other official reports, does it not?
Well, it does. And one of the things, and you'll find this hard to believe, but I got in trouble talking to a group of lawyers at one point.
Shocking.
When they said, "Well, what's wrong with the world?" And I said, "You guys." And they said, "Well, what are you talking about?" I said, "Look, a society is built on trust."
Yeah.
It's the old story about a business deal was a handshake.
Yes.
But the lawyers came in and said, "Don't trust anybody. Get a contract."
Yep.
Okay, and I'll tell you, one of the best students I ever had went and became a lawyer, and he took a course in contract law at the University of Victoria Law School, and the best contract lawyer in Canada came in and said, "Okay, we're going to, if you sign a contract, there's no problem. If you don't sign a contract, there's no problem. We'll now have a course in contract law." And so what you've got is a society that's being told by their legal advisors, don't trust anybody, but that's fundamental to the society, as you said.
Yes.
And it's particularly true. And by the way, there is a thing called the Hatch Act. And the Hatch Act is a limitation on the political activities of civil servants. And it's done. It was put in deliberately because of this kind of problem that a civil servant is entitled to their own political views as an American citizen, but they're not entitled to participate or to use the information that they have for a political agenda. Now, the most egregious example of this was James Hansen, who was the head of NASA GIS, which, of course, was one of the agencies that was cooking the data and falsifying the data. And, I mean, he was actually arrested outside the White House protesting. And yet he was the head of NASA GIS. And yet the Hatch Act was never applied to him. And I spoke to his boss when he was at NASA GIS, a guy by the name of John Toon, T-H-O-E-N. And I said, "John, what was going on? Why wasn't he prosecuted under the Hatch Act?" And John said, "The word came down from above. Leave him alone."
Yeah,
we
certainly saw that with Hillary there, where it's this selective application of justice. And again, that itself also undermines trust. You can't trust the government numbers. You can't trust the fact that the Justice Department is going to prosecute everybody fairly, regardless of who they are. In terms of these numbers here, there should always be skepticism in science, but there shouldn't be outright mistrust. Because, you know, when you look at these numbers and how they've been manipulated, it really begs the question, if someone was willing to do this with an official government report, so then how many peer-reviewed papers are also written using falsified data?
Well, one of the things that came out in the ClimateGate 1, which we referred to earlier, the leak of 1,000 emails from East Anglia, actually it was the Climatic Research Unit at East Anglia, which, by the way, was founded by Hubert Lam, and he helped me with my doctoral thesis, so I've been associated with that agency for a long time. But the first 1,000 emails that were leaked actually didn't talk much about the science. What they did was they presented evidence of them colluding, for example, asking each other, well, do you want to be author on this paper? And then you can list it on your CV. And then who are we going to get to review this paper? And they actually got an editor of a journal, the Geophysical Research Letters, a fellow by the name of James Sayers. They actually got him fired because he produced something that they didn't like. So the whole peer review process in the climate science area completely corrupted.
Well, but in terms of
the story has hardly been told.
Yeah, but in terms of using data, which, you know, should be fairly objective, obviously, if we're seeing this kind of falsified data in an official government report, doesn't that seem to imply then that you will have also falsified data that provide the backbone to so many of these papers?
Of course. But here's the bigger problem. There is no data. You see, one of the things that I went to Australia prior to appearing on Capitol Hill recently was because of Senator Malcolm Roberts, who I'd been working with. We had been asking for 3 years, don't give us the output of your computer models. That's not real data.
That's right.
We want empirical data. Where is your actual empirical data? That is the actual measurement that human CO2 is causing warming. Don't tell us what the computer model says. That's not real data. We're at the point now, and one of the things when you look at the whole hockey stick, they're talking about synthetic data. There is so little data that in order to even produce the basic models that they're using, they create a computer model that creates data, which they then use as real data in another computer model. That's how corrupted this has become. And it's the difficulty is that you have a hypothesis, you then go looking for the data, which either supports or rejects your hypothesis,
That's right.
But the data isn't there, so they've had to make up the data.
Yeah.
It's all synthetic data.
Yep.
And so when we asked the Australian Bureau of Meteorology, where's your empirical data? They couldn't produce it.
No, they sure couldn't. Hey, we only got about 30 seconds here with you. Will the fact that NOAA cheated on the warming data give Trump the intellectual permission, so to speak, to begin withdrawing from the Paris Accords or some of these other climate agreements?
Oh, he was going to do that anyway.
Okay.
This just simply actually makes it more easy for him to do it, because he can now turn around and say, well, look, here's an example. It's still going on since I've been elected. And so, it does. In the same way, ironically, that the false data was being used to promote the Paris Climate Conference, the fact that it's false data now is perfect excuse for Trump to say no. The whole
That's
Paris
great.
Climate Agreement has got to go.
Good. All right. Well, Dr. Tim, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity, as always.
And coming up next, Burgess Owens. He is a former NFL star. The liberal agenda isn't just destroying America. It's reaching right down into the black communities. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're going to talk now to Burgess Owens. He's a former NFL player, first with the New York Jets and then later on with the Raiders. He's the author of the recently released book, Liberalism, or How to Turn Good Men into Whiners, Weenies, and Wimps. And boy, Burgess, it's good to talk to you again.
Well, same here. I know we have some really good topics, very topical topics, so I look forward to going through with you, discussing with the audience.
Yeah, well, I think to get us going here, your book is so right on the money, I think, in terms of the overall culture of sports right now. And let's maybe start by taking a look at ESPN, which used to be the premier sports network. Back in November, ESPN's ombudsman came out saying that he was concerned that ESPN has become far too liberal. Even ESPN board members were getting worried about the liberal bent. Breitbart recently reported that ESPN lost almost 3.2 million subscribers in just the last year. But over the last few years, ESPN has been bleeding about 300,000 subscribers a month on average. I mean, that's just horrendous. And worse, they lost 621,000 subscribers just in October alone. I mean, this is not a fall from grace. This is like a meteor impact. As a former player, what do you attribute that decline to? Is it just the politics?
Well, I think it's the nature of who we are. You know, I tell you, when I think about our history, what America has been very, very good about and the way we started within our DNA is we don't like bullies. We don't like people demanding that we live or think in a certain way. I mean, it all started with the fight against the English, you know, and then other throughout the history of our country, we've always fought against bullyism. When you look at what the left does, it's not a matter of having a nice conversation. It is truly pushing their agenda, and Americans just don't like that to be pushed on them, whether it be subtle or not. So what we're seeing right now is just a response. People don't want to turn on entertainment to be lectured to by entertainers. They, you know, I was a football player. That was my passion. That's what I was good at. I was not, at the same time, I could not demand that people adhere to my views on politics because I was a football player. And so I think at the end of the day, across the board, and that's including the NFL and NBA, they need to realize what their place is, and that is to entertain, not to dictate to us what our values should be. We like football. We like basketball, but we love our country more. And at the end of the day, NFL is going to figure that out once we start boycotting them, as they're talking about now boycotting our people. So it's going to be a very interesting next year as the lean left. And I like to let people realize again, we're not talking about black and white issues, not even gay and straight issues. We're talking about ideologies, socialists, Marxists, atheists. And they have their ways, and we have our ways. We have to make sure that we don't let them bully over us.
That's right. You know, back in the day, in the 90s there, I was a huge Buffalo Bills fan because they had their four marches to the Super Bowl. And I used to devour all sorts of sports shows. And it really seems very different from back in the 90s to where they are today in terms of how ESPN covers stores. I mean, they used to really go in depth onto some of the strategies that the different teams are using and look at these types of coverages, you know, be watching for these kinds of things. And now it's much more focused on these kind of human interest stories. That seems to be about 90% sometimes of some of these ESPN stories. And I can't stand that, quite frankly. I don't care for these stories on ESPN where they always seem to have these grown football players crying over some hardship in their life. I want to watch sports, not Oprah. But I think that really illustrates something that you've talked about, this overall wussification, not just of sports, but of men.
Yeah, and I tell you, what I love, and it just so, it seems like it's very topical when I came up with the title, Liberalism, How to Turn Good Men into Whiners, Weenies, and Wimps. I look at places like the state of Texas, and you're not going to find that. And that's in that particular state. You're going to find people who go back to understanding, whether it be Democrats or Republicans, that they have a way of living and is not up in a way of moving forward. And it's not up to NFL or ESPN to dictate to them how they should do that. So I look back, and I agree with you. At the end of the day, we finish our day of working and all the stress we go through to relax and just enjoy a little bit of entertainment. And entertainers have to recognize that's not what they're there to do, is to convince us that their liberal fashion of different ways is the way we should be living our lives.
No, absolutely not. You know, they got started in September 1979. You started playing in the NFL in 1973. You were with the Jets through 79, and then you played a few seasons 1980 through 1982 with the Raiders. So were you ever interviewed by ESPN? I mean, and were they sideline comments, or did you actually have a more formal sit-down?
Well, yeah. I don't remember actually being interviewed by them during that time, but you're right, Mark. You said on the head. During that period, the early part of when they came aboard and when they were really at their best, it was about sports. It was about the X and O's, and it was about strategies and about the I would even say the personalities of the different teams. Some kind of way, this political polarization has happened. And the actual the idea that this entertainment group can now focus on things that they want to push throughout our country, and we just have to we show we don't want to do that by not turning them on again. Yeah. And at the end of the day, that's what capitalism is all about. We We vote without pocketbooks, and they're beginning to realize that they need to turn back and just be a very neutral company, because you have, you have people on both sides of the court. So be neutral. Just be right down to do what you're supposed to do, and you'll find out that I think in that case you'll get a lot of that success. The business will be very successful.
Well, I would certainly think so. The reason I was asking if you'd ever been interviewed by them was, did you ever get any sense that they were asking political questions? I mean, it really does seem like when they first started, it really was all about sports. I just don't remember any of the societal comments.
No, this is something that's happened over the last few years, where the political leaning is kind of filtered in everything we do and everything we watch on TV. And this is really, I think, the problem is you start off very subtly. You can kind of begin to tell where people are based on their questions and the way they're going, but right now it's in your face. So they're going to have some major decisions about sports overall. Do they go back to sports, or they can continue to push us in a liberal fashion?
Yes.
And I don't think our country's going to go for that.
No, I don't think so either. All right, everyone, stay with us. We're going to have more on the mix of politics and sports coming back with Burgess Owen. Stay with us.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
And welcome back to the I Spy Radio Show. We're talking today about that liberal agenda and even how that's infusing its way into sports. We're talking with Burgess Owens. He played for the New York Jets and also with the Raiders back in the 70s and 80s. And he's also the author of the book, Liberalism, or How to Turn Good Men into Whiners, Weenies, and Wimps. And you can find that on ispyradio.com or anywhere that is where books are sold. And, you know, we've been talking a lot, both with our previous guests and with you, about the liberal agenda, where they are pushing politics. And you made a great point in the last segment there, is that they really are true believers in their various philosophies. And so they feel that compelled almost to mix that into every conversation, except it gets so freaking tiring all the time, to the point where we saw that this was kind of building up watching the Super Bowl. We're hearing about some of these ads that were going to be preaching at us about their viewpoints. We were afraid that during the halftime show that Lady Gaga was going to launch into this sort of thing. Some of these companies, as I said, were preaching their liberal doctrines at us through their ads, but also in the build up to it. I mean, really, and they're doing this at a time, the Super Bowl. I mean, this is a huge American tradition. And is there any proud American traditions that liberals can't or won't try to screw up?
Well, I think what we have to recognize, we have been a great country because of our foundation, because of even though every generation has gotten better and better, there's a foundation of Judeo-Christian values that we've leaned on. That's been our foundation. And what we have to understand, we're fighting for the soul and heart of our country this time. We really are, guys. It's so much more than the stuff we see on the surface. It's not black and white and rich and poor. It's truly our good old-fashioned Judeo-Christian values, which allows us to be tolerant of everyone and be such an accepting country, or is the atheist, socialist, and Marxist. That's always the underlying theme of liberalism. And in my book, I talk about this. And we can learn so much about looking at the black history, because in the early 1900s, you wouldn't have seen a better race that have bought on to the American way. Yeah. We were in the 40s and 50s and 60s. We were the closest family in our country. More men committed to marriage. We had over 40% of black Americans were part of the black middle class. We had more entrepreneurs percentage-wise than any other race out there. And here we are, 50 years later, and we're at the bottom of everything because we bought into liberalism, socialism, Marxism. So understand that it's a cancer. And it's very stealth. And they did it to us through NAACP, 21 white, Marxist, racist, socialist Democrats. And they began in 1910 to slowly involve themselves into our community. And that's what they do across the board. We have to be careful, and that's what we're up
against. I was going to say, and doing it while pretending to be your friends. But at the whole time, exactly. They're sabotaging. And, this fits in so well with what we were talking about with our previous guests, is that they do it under this guise of helping, and yet at the same time it's about destroying and all of the rest. And you're right, is that when you look back, and I really enjoyed your book, by the way, When you look back at the history there, it really makes sense why the black community would be so tightly knit, so family oriented. I mean, because you look at just the recent history there, where some of them were still alive back in the early 1900s. They remembered what it was like to be under slavery. They remembered what it was like when their families were broken up. They remembered all of the abuse and everything that they took. And then they were freed. And now suddenly you've got this explosion there of wanting to embrace the American dream, of trying to build a better life, of really keeping those families together. And then along come the liberals.
And it's interesting because you hit on the head. There was an appreciation from the black community that was because of that background that was so pro-American capitalist and just free base. And that what liberals do, progressives, is they steal out history. Hmm. One of the 21 white board members of the NAACP, they had one black guy out there, even though they called themselves a black organization, one black guy, W.E. Du Bois. But one of them was John Dewey, progressive, father progressive. He's an atheist. I mean, you go through the list of your stuff, and what they try to do and what they have done is steal our history. How many black Americans, this is all new news of how well we were doing in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. That we truly were, the middle class was one of the greatest growth middle classes ever because of what we did. And I was part of that. I grew up in that. So when I left my segregated community, there was no doubt in my mind, along with all my friends, that we were going to succeed. It didn't matter who we were going up against. We were going to succeed. Mm. That's the message that's not out there now. So we have Black Lives Matter. And in a nation where for eight years we had a black president, and these unfortunate in our community, we feel that we don't have a chance in our country. And that's because liberals love misery. They love to use misery as a strategy to keep us down.
They do.
Because we lean on them and we do that. So we have to get away from that and realize the truth. And the truth is out there, guys. We just have to look for it and work for it, fight against this narrative of the liberals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that you have said that Planned Parenthood and Margaret Sanger, they are one of the biggest destructive forces right now in black families. You know, and then you add in the progressive messaging coming out of Hollywood, which is up in arms over Planned Parenthood possibly being defunded. They're calling it this whole approach being anti-woman and the usual invectives. I mean, talk to us a little bit more about Planned Parenthood and the black community.
Oh, listen, guys, and this is where the truth and our history needs to come in place. First of all, Marvin Singh was one of the most evil racists,
yes,
eugenicists in our history, and she used stealth to get there. Understand that the Democratic Party, the Democratic KKK, lynched over 4,300 Americans. By the way, 1,300 of them were white, mostly Republicans. We have today, since 1973, 40 million black babies aborted. The KKK would love to have seen, they would be so proud of what the Democratic Party has done to the black race. And so not only have they murdered 40 million of our babies, but they made sure that we're not educated. They're the ones that fight against choice. They talk about the choice of having an abortion, but they will not give our black kids, our poor black kids, choice of getting an education, the best education. Why? Because ignorance is the best way to keep people from being free.
Oh, absolutely.
So you take away our education, you then take away the opportunity for black kids to have a job. 83% of black teen males are unemployed, and we don't hear any of this from our black liberal friends because they could care less. Their ideology is more important, these Democrats, than our race.
Yeah, their job is. I was going to say their job is to peddle dissent for sure. All right, let's take a break there. Lots more with Burgess Owens. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Burgess Owens, a former NFL player with the Jets and then with the Raiders. He is also an author. His book is Liberalism or How to Turn Good Men into Whiners, Weenies, and Wimps. And you can find that by heading to iSpyRadio.com. Just look for the store tab there. We've got all of our authors or all of our guests' books up there. Make it easier to find. And, you know, we were talking there about Planned Parenthood. And I agree with you. I think it is just... It really is a spiritual warfare. We were talking during the break there about that. But why is it, do you think, that black Americans don't get the fact that Planned Parenthood would just as well like to see blacks disappear?
Well, it comes down to, keep in mind, it's all about education. And Karl Marx, the author of Socialism and Communism, said the next battleground is going to be teaching history. And so they actually have retaught our history. The things I have now learned, or relearned, it should be taught today to our kids. And at the end of the day, we start doing. That's why they're so up in arms. By the way, of divorce.
Yes.
They recognize that right now they're teetering on losing everything they worked so hard for, and they really felt they were so close to finally taking this country over, the socialists, the Marxists, and the atheists. And right now, that's why Donald Trump is such a big threat to them. He talks about going into the inner city. He has a 10-point plan. Go and look on the internet at the New Deal, and recognize they have a president today who they're trying to call a racist, who has a real New Deal for Black Americans. The last time that's been done on paper and planned was back in Lincoln days, because the Democrats have not done that anywhere since then, including Barack Obama putting together a plan that allows Black Americans to see exactly how we're going to tackle the misery that Democrats have put on us. So we have a battle, but at the end of the day, things like this, Mark, you know, you allow me to have this venue, me being the background I have to talk about this. Americans are finding out for the first time things they just never knew about. And once we educate ourselves, Marxism, socialism, anarchism will never, ever work in this country. We don't like bullies. We never have, and we never will.
Yeah, well, I think you're right in the sense that it's not just a philosophical and ideological battle, but it really is a spiritual battle. And I think it's interesting that the new Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, she's a very devout Christian, and she believes that all families should have school choice. And I absolutely agree with her. And in fact, it's so much common sense that if there's a failing school, give people more options. And yet the Democrats are digging in their heels saying, oh my gosh, we have to protect these public schools. Well, if they're failing, you've got to have another option.
Well, here's the thing. It's interesting because I've heard that for the last 40 years, the same deal. Because you have Democrats, they care more about the buildings. They care more about the people showing up, getting their pay, and they're getting their dues paid. We, the people, Americans, Christians and all other religions, those of us who care about our kids, we care that our kids have a choice. If they can talk about choice for mothers having abortion, we should have choice of parents for the kids to go to the best school possible. It's all about choice. That's what our country is about. And we'll get back to that. And I think just America just need to understand it is a spiritual battle. It's been going on for a long time, and we need to win this one big time.
Yeah, absolutely. When we last talked to you, we talked a little bit about where Obama went wrong on race and the fact that he was much more of a divider than he was a uniter. What do you see looking ahead here the next 4 years with the approach that Trump is taking? Where do you think that he's going right? What advice would you offer him, that sort of thing?
Well, I tell you, I wouldn't ask and offer him advice. He's done pretty well, including bringing me on board. I was not a Trump guy at the very beginning, but I begin to listen to him. I see his heart. I see the fact he loves our country. To put America first is what we've needed for a long time. And we have a capitalist instead of a socialist. The difference in Barack Obama, and I'm not about the color thing, by the way. I'm about America.
Yeah,
I don't care
too.
If you're black or white. If you care about our country, I'm for you.
That's right.
Barack Obama did not care about our country. And the evidence is the misery he allowed to happen to a race that supported and loved him most. The black people, the black race, are doing worse now than they ever have been because they trusted this guy to take care of me, and he fell short of that. So Donald Trump is doing the right things, and I love what he's done for the folks he has for the black community. That right there got my attention because that's my focus also.
Yeah. We've got about a minute here with you. You're coming to Oregon on Saturday, March 18th, down to Medford. It's for their Lincoln Day dinner. What do you plan on talking about? Because we'd like to make sure that people know, and we'll get the exact details later on. We'll put that on our events page. But what are just some of the things that you'll be covering?
Well, I tell you, I would love for people to show up because I have a perspective. Thank goodness I grew up in the segregated days of downtown Tallahassee. So I have a perspective of decades of seeing how great our country is. Every single generation gets better, and I love what we do. I love what we stand for. And because I've had a chance to do some history with my book, we have done great things together, guys. And so I'll be talking about that, and the goal is to have everybody leaving uplifted and realizing we have the best opportunities in the history of mankind because of the country we live in.
Oh, we sure do. We sure do. Burgess, I want to thank you so much for your time and hope to run into you down there in Medford.
Oh, we'd love to see you there, Mark. You'll call it for sure.
That'd be awesome. All right. Bye-bye. That is all of our time for today. Thanks for joining us, and we certainly hope that you're a little wiser than when you got here. Be sure to check our website for links related to today's show, along with more details on Burgess Owens' appearance here in Oregon at the Lincoln Day Dinner. See the events tab at the top of the website there. You can also find links to both of our guest books or any of our guests on the store page. Do be sure to share any or all of that with your friends and family on Facebook or Twitter. And remember, every time you share I Spy, a liberal doesn't get their wings. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.